The Abbotsville fire truck began pumping water on our house. A man on the roof pointed to places that needed it most. I watched our absolute morphidite go black and crumble. Miss Maudie's sun hat settled on top of the heap. I could not see her hedge clippers. In the heat between our house, Miss Rachel's and Miss Maudie's, the men had long ago shed coats and bathrobes. They worked in pajama tops and nightshirts stuffed into their pants. But I became aware that I was slowly freezing where I stood. Jim tried to keep me warm, but his arm was not enough. I pulled free of it and clutched my shoulders. By dancing a little, I could feel my feet. Another fire truck appeared and stopped in front of Miss Stephanie Crawford's. There was no hydrant for another hose, and the men tried to soak her house with hand extinguishers. Miss Maudie's tin roof quelled the flames. Roaring, the house collapsed. Fire gushed everywhere, followed by a flurry of blankets from men on top of the adjacent houses, beating out sparks and burning chunks of wood. It was dawn before the men began to leave, first one by one, then in groups. They pushed the Macomb fire truck back to town. The Abbotsville truck departed. The third one remained. We found out next day it had come from Clark's Ferry, 60 miles away. Jim and I slid across the street. Miss Maudie was staring at the smoking black hole in her yard, and Attica shook his head to tell us she did not want to talk. He led us home, holding on to our shoulders to cross the icy street. He said Miss Maudie would stay with Miss Stephanie for the time being. "Anybody want some hot chocolate?" he asked. I shuddered when Attica started a fire in the kitchen stove. As we drank our cocoa, I noticed Atticus looking at me, first with curiosity, then with sternness. "I thought I told you and Jim to stay put," he said. "Why, we did. We stayed. Then whose blanket is that?" "Blanket?" "Yes, ma'am, blanket. It isn't ours." I looked down and found myself clutching a brown woolen blanket I was wearing around my shoulders, squaw fashion. "Atticus, I don't know, sir. I turned to Jim for an answer, but Jim was even more bewildered than I. He said he didn't know how it got there. We did exactly as Atticus had told us. We stood down by the Radley gate away from everybody. We didn't move an inch. Jim stopped. "Mr. Nathan was at the fire," he babbled. "I saw him. I saw him. He was tugging that mattress. Atticus, I swear." "That's all right, son." Atticus grinned slowly. "Looks like all of Macomb was out tonight, in one way or another. Jim, there's some wrapping paper in the pantry, I think. Go get it and we'll—" "Atticus, no, sir." Jim seemed to have lost his mind. He began pouring out our secrets right and left in total disregard for my safety, if not for his own, omitting nothing, knothole, pants, and all. "Mr. Nathan put cement in that tree, Atticus, and he did it to stop us finding things. He's crazy, I reckon, like they say, but Atticus, I swear to God, he ain't ever harmed us. He ain't ever hurt us. He could have cut my throat from ear to ear that night, but he tried to mend my pants instead. He ain't ever hurt us, Atticus." Atticus said, "Whoa, son," so gently that I was greatly heartened. It was obvious that he had not followed a word Jim said, for all Atticus said was, "You're right. We'd better keep this and the blanket to ourselves. Some day, maybe, Scout can thank him for covering her up." "Thank who?" I asked. "Boo Radley. You were so busy looking at the fire, you didn't know it when he put the blanket around you." My stomach turned to water, and I nearly threw up when Jim held out the blanket and crept toward me. He sneaked out of the house, turned around, sneaked up, and went like this. Attica said dryly, "Do not let this inspire you to further glory, Jeremy." Jim scowled. "I ain't gonna do anything to him," but I watched the spark of fresh adventure leave his eyes. "Just think, Scout," he said, "if you'd just turned around, you'd have seen him." Calpurnia woke us at noon. Atticus had said we need not go to school that day. We'd learn nothing after no sleep. Calpurnia said for us to try and clean up the front yard. Miss Maudie's sun hat was suspended in a thin layer of ice, like a fly in amber, and we had to dig under the dirt for her hedge clippers. We found her in her backyard, gazing at her frozen, charred azaleas. "We're bringing back your things, Miss Maudie," said Jim. "We're awful sorry." Miss Maudie looked around, and the shadow of her old grin crossed her face. "Always wanted a smaller house, Jim Finch. Gives me more yard. Just think, I'll have more room for my azaleas now." "You ain't grieving, Miss Maudie?" I asked, surprised. Attica said her house was nearly all she had. "Grieving, child? Why, I hated that old cow barn. Thought of setting fire to it 100 times myself, except they'd lock me up. But don't you worry about me, Jean Louise Finch. There are ways of doing things you don't know about. Why, I'll build me a little house and take me a couple of roomers, and gracious, I'll have the finest yard in Alabama. Those Bellin grass'll look plain puny when I get started." Jim and I looked at each other. "How'd it catch, Miss Maudie?" he asked. "I don't know, Jim. Probably the flu in the kitchen. I kept a fire in there last night for my potted plants. Hear you had some unexpected company last night, Miss Jean Louise." "How'd you know?" "Atticus told me on his way to town this morning. Tell you the truth, I'd like to have been with you, and I'd have had sense enough to turn around, too." Miss Maudie puzzled me. With most of her possessions gone, and her beloved yard a shambles, she still took a lively and cordial interest in Jim's and my affairs. She must have seen my perplexity. She said, "Only thing I worried about last night was all the danger and commotion it caused. This whole neighborhood could have gone up. Mr. Avery'll be in bed for a week. He's right stove up. He's too old to do things like that, and I told him so. Soon as I can get my hands clean, and when Stephanie Crawford's not looking, I'll make him a lane cake. That Stephanie's been after my recipe for 30 years, and if she thinks I'll give it to her just because I'm staying with her, she's got another think coming." I reflected that if Miss Maudie broke down and gave it to her, Miss Stephanie couldn't follow it anyway. Miss Maudie had once let me see it. Among other things, the recipe called for 1 large cup of sugar. It was a still day. The air was so cold and clear, we heard the courthouse clock clank, rattle, and strain before it struck the hour. Miss Maudie's nose was a color I had never seen before, and I inquired about it. "I've been out here since 6 o'clock," she said. "Should be frozen by now." She held up her hands. A network of tiny lines crisscrossed her palms, brown with dirt and dried blood. "You've ruined 'em," said Jim. "Why don't you get a colored man?" There was no note of sacrifice in his voice when he added, "Or Scout and me, we can help you." Miss Maudie said, "Thank you, sir, but you've got a job of your own over there." She pointed to our yard. "You mean the Morphodite?" I asked. "Shoot, we can rake him up in a jiffy." Miss Maudie stared down at me, her lips moving silently. Suddenly she put her hands to her head and whooped. When we left her, she was still chuckling. Jim said he didn't know what was the matter with her. That was just Miss Maudie.